18. We will need witnesses. The supply chain building in Cluster 1 of ExxonMobil's gas fields in Aceh, Indonesia, stood on cleared land ringed by palm trees that rustled in ocean winds. The facility contained a processing plant for cement and chemicals used for cleaning pipes in the Arun gas fields. Grasses and rubbery purple-tinted shrubs encroached on the chain-link fences and partially obscured from view a dozen or so beige storage tanks. Not even ExxonMobil's disciplined tree-trimming systems could keep Aceh's literal forests at bay. Farmers from nearby Mi village often wandered along the fence line, as did their cows and goats. By the spring of 2007, villagers no longer had to endure the occasional crack of a rifle shot, or the risk of arbitrary detention by Indonesian army soldiers, or the Achenese separatist rebels known as the GAM. On August 15, 2005, in Helsinki, Finland, Hassan Ditiro and his comrades in the rebel leadership had signed a peace accord with the government of Indonesia. Afterward, GAM disarmed its cadres and reorganized to enter peaceful democratic politics. The Indonesian army, or TNI, withdrew most of its troops from Aceh. All that remained of the war were its ghosts, the missing and unaccounted dead. Years earlier, ExxonMobil had benefited from the Bush administration's intervention against GAM, when the administration quietly urged the guerrillas to stop targeting the corporation. The violence had subsided, but ExxonMobil's reliance on the administration for protection persisted. The venue had now shifted from Aceh's jungle to Washington courtrooms. At issue was whether America's largest private corporation bore any responsibility for the Aceh conflict's legacy of death, injury, and torture. The peace deal between GAM and Indonesia's weak, nascent democratic government had produced no serious investigations of the war's abuses. About 1,000 young Achenese men remained missing. For the most part, their relatives accepted that they were dead, but many ached to bury their sons or husbands on family compounds. Occasionally, farmers and villagers stumbled over human remains in the places where the TNI had previously established interrogation centers, such as along the perimeter of ExxonMobil's gas fields. In December 2005, for example, some villagers living near the corporation's Cluster 2 gas fields found human bones and decomposed clothing in a sack buried in the ground. The sack contained a wallet with an identity card inside. The victim, a young GAM volunteer named Kahagruddin, had been arrested at his home in 2003. His widow reburied her husband's remains in their tree-shaded yard. When new bones were discovered in this way, the word spread, and families of the missing traveled to the informal excavation sites, seeking evidence that might bring their own searches to a close. During the third week of June 2007, an Achenese civilian discovered bones inside a safety tank within the ExxonMobil facility at Cluster 1, near Mi. Exactly how the discovery was made and how the searcher got inside the fence was never made clear. A survivor of TNI detention had publicly identified the supply chain building as a place where soldiers in camouflage uniforms had interrogated him and his brother. The brother was among Aceh's disappeared. By June 20th, news of the bone find had circulated. Crowds gathered at ExxonMobil's chain-link gate and demanded to be let inside. The corporation's unarmed guards, some of them Achenese, yielded. The villagers spread the excavated bones on a warehouse floor and took photographs. The ExxonMobil security guards established a police line to protect the evidence. The crowd was excited and agitated. Some of them noticed a mound of rubble and dirt outside that looked as if it might be a makeshift grave. They demanded that the ExxonMobil guards dig up the mounds, but the guards refused. They instead summoned the police. A deputy commissioner arrived and announced to the villagers that they must control themselves. He said they would need a forensic team as well as permits from ExxonMobil before they could dig. The crowd of villagers and farmers decamped to the North Aceh police station and obtained an audience with the police chief, who promised to investigate. "We will need witnesses, because what we will dig up on ExxonMobil property is someone else's house," he said. Later, the police suggested that the villagers had been mistaken, and that what they had found in the storage tanks were the remains of animals. Photographs of the bone fragments, to an amateur eye, were ambiguous. There was nothing as obvious as either a human's skull or a cow's jawbone. In any event, The Indonesian army had no intention of allowing a serious investigation to proceed. General Bambang Darmono, who had commanded Indonesian military operations in Aceh between 2002 and the final peace agreement, explained to an interviewer, "If we keep digging up the past, the problem in Aceh will never be resolved. Everyone violated human rights laws. It wasn't only the Indonesian armed forces, but the cops, the government, the GAM. Do we want to keep talking about that? If we do, we will always talk about violence and there will be no peace. But if we want to have peace, we have to bury everything." After the Bush administration intimidated GAM into ceasing its direct attacks on ExxonMobil's gas fields in Aceh in 2001, which allowed the corporation's operations in the province to resume, the war had turned even more brutal. President Megawati's military-aligned government in Jakarta imposed martial law. To destroy GAM, she deployed about 22,000 TNI soldiers, 12,000 paramilitary police, and authorized the recruitment of 10,000 militiamen. She curtailed civil liberties and banned or restricted international aid and human rights groups in Aceh. Shielded from scrutiny, the Indonesian military detained, tortured, and executed hundreds of young Acehese men after 2001.